then I had the opportunity to go overseas. And frankly, I'm convinced there was five other candidates, but what broke the tie was the fact that I was the one candidate that could speak Spanish. We were pretty much equal in other ways. And so at the age of 28, I moved to Santiago, Chile, and looked after marketing communications for Chile, Peru, Bolivia, and Ecuador.
Welcome to Beyond High Street. I'm your host, David Schwab. Today's guest is a real treat for me, a friend at Miami who is now absolutely killing it in the marketplace. It's one thing to lead one company in their global marketing efforts. It's legendary to do it for two. And Rebecca Messina has done just that. First for the Coca-Cola Company, and now for Beam Suntory and all of their world-class beverage brands. The conversation begins as we unfold the Super Bowl ads.
My surprise favorites were the work I never expected to love. I thought the NFL did really nice work with the
Eli Manning.
That was great. I just unexpected, right? Mm-hmm. And I also think the NBC did some beautiful work getting people ready for the Olympics. So I thought they used that moment really well. And then from a brand perspective, I thought Verizon's work was stunning with the first responders, because often you can get good work in the Super Bowl, but it doesn't have a lot to do with the brand. And I thought they understood their role as a reliable network when you most need it. I thought the way they used the calls themselves and the imagery, it was just really well done. And really, I thought, you know, you could so clearly see the role of the brand in it. You know, Budweiser, I liken it a little bit like Budweiser's work on the water, and the water they gave for the relief efforts. I thought that's just a beautiful example of a brand that realizes it's much bigger than the product it sells. And so I thought they did a really nice job. And that was a spot that certainly moved me. And I think reminded everybody that it's our brand. It's a very American brand. It's something we can be proud of. And then the long shot that I didn't see coming, my favorite of all was Alexa. Mm-hmm. That was, now I'm sure not inexpensive to produce, neither the media to buy nor the celebrities in it, but they're, understanding of what that brand is, how sometimes it's intrusive, how crazy some of the questions they must get are, and what if Alexa had a brain, what she'd probably really be thinking if she could answer honestly. The wittiness, the self-deprecation they showed, I thought it really did a nice job of humanizing this voice that's in your home. And so that was for sure my favorite.
I thought Alexa, certainly from a cash flow and revenue, the one that could afford a spot, they were in good position for media and celebrities. Rebecca, to what you said about Verizon on good work and understanding about their brand, and there's not always that connection, because I think some marketers may say the Super Bowl is the one time where it doesn't always have to connect back to the brand.
And I do think it's true, but jackpot when it does.
Yeah.
And so it's like, and I think no one would ever start work and saying it shouldn't connect. Sometimes our idea gets so far out there that it doesn't. And so I think it's moving moment, and it might create some awareness and a little bit of chatter, but I don't know that it ever really moves the brand's needle. I thought Verizon, particularly, there's an idea they're sitting on there, which is that reliable network at the time you most needed it. So it was timely, and it was important, and these were stories that probably hadn't been told, and it gave a hero to someone else other than the brand, which was the first responders. So I just thought it was really, really good. And I do think, and certainly I come from a brand that sometimes, you know, it could go all the way up that ladder and not always be about the product or exactly what the brand stood for. But it's hard to get it all right. And I thought they really did hit it spot on.
On your NFL comment and the dirty dancing with Eli and Odell, you'll like the New York Post. I'm not sure if you've seen it. The cover of their paper is Giants Win. And it's the dirty dancing scene where Eli's has Odell on the, you know, up, and he's
kind of holding him up.
Yeah,
yep.
And there's an asterisk after win, and then on the bottom it says best dad, and then very small in the corner, Eagles beat Patriots to win the Super Bowl.
Oh my gosh! So, I love that.
I mean, to get the cover of a newspaper in the number one DMA in the country, to me that wins the ad meter just with that alone.
Exactly. No, it was. It was really well done, and you don't expect it from them. And I thought they really. And it's a brand, by the way, that I'm sure also needs a softer side to be portrayed. So I thought it was really nice.
Yeah. The other one that I think people talked a lot about socially was Tide, just weaving in every quarter.
Yeah. Tide did a really nice job. I didn't see that coming either, to be honest. And it's from a company that I know, you know, in our minds as old marketers, and I've been around a long time, they were this brand that, you know, was always about, you know, washes whiter. And they took washes, they're starting to really show themselves even a more kind of emotional side, bringing out some humor. And I really thought they did a nice job showing the brand in an entirely different light and definitely unexpected. And even laughing at the moment a little bit about what we all expect from these ads and then the way they came out. So I thought that was good work.
The other big winner, I think, Justin Timberlake. Some people like the performance, some not, some question the Prince involvement. But if you look at the last 7 days, he did an Amex-sponsored launch party for his album at Paisley Park at Prince's Place at the Super Bowl. Then he did work with Verizon, Chevy Truck, Target. He launched his Air Jordan shoes during halftime. They've already sold out. And then he plays this coming weekend in the AT&T Pro-Am. He kind of hit it all.
Yeah, that guy's something. I mean, and it shows you he doesn't have any, I don't think, maybe I'm wrong. I'm not that relevant, but I don't think he's got any new music released of late, but he's really the Madonna of our age. He continues to stay relevant. He's such a cool guy. I don't think he's super polarizing. I can see there was some controversy over the use of the hologram and Prince's perspective on digital imagery, et cetera. And, you know, I think if you go back to his intent, which is what was the best way to honor Prince, he must have believed that was the right way to do it. But I thought it was certainly a great performance. And just, he is an amazing entertainer.
Yeah. The other one, speaking of polarizing, that people talked about this morning was the Dodge ad using
Martin Luther King's voice. That's a hard call, right? I mean, you know, when is it right to reuse those speeches, and does a car company or does anybody really have permission to do that? I'm sure they worked with a family, and I'm sure they cleared all the rights they needed to use, but it just shows you that's, at the end of the day, sometimes we reserve that for really special things. That's hard to get right. I don't think they got it right.
Yeah.
I think that's just pushing it too far.
And Miami had a Super Bowl champion. Brandon Brooks plays for the Eagles. So
Oxford, look at that.
Oxford gets that too.
Oxford gets a win. Love it.
All right. So you, and we just spent 6-7 minutes talking Super Bowl, and you didn't say anything about Coca-Cola or Diet Coke, and that's fine. 20 years for you in Atlanta or Paris or all over the world doing Coca-Cola. Go back to leaving Oxford and starting there, and a bit unusual. Most people have 4 or 5 jobs, but you were at Coca-Cola for 20-plus years.
Yeah, it was 22 years. It was crazy. So, I mean, I was lucky. I pulled out of my house on South Main Street in Oxford. I will never forget it. We graduated on May 14th, 1994, and I started work at the Coca-Cola company on May 17th, 1994. Wow. I started as an intern, and what's turned into a 3-month internship then led to a 6-month. I got extended to a 9-month, and at 9 months, I kind of walked in and said, look, I got to sort of get my life going. And they offered me a job. And, you know, I was right time, right place in a lot of ways. And just had, frankly, I think Miami gives you a lot of confidence. And I had a lot of opportunities to lead. And I was able to just bring a lot to bear at a time when Coke was really growing. It was under the days of Sergio Zeman, which is an icon of marketing. And I was really able to come in when he was really bringing in new talent. It was investment years. They were still really strong growth years for the company. There was still a lot of horizontal growth to be had. And it was a beautiful time to get into marketing. I started in global. I was in global roles from media roles, then sports and entertainment marketing. And then I had the opportunity to go overseas. And frankly, I'm convinced there was 5 other candidates, but what broke the tie was the fact that I was the one candidate that could speak Spanish. We were pretty much equal in other ways. And so at the age of 28, I moved to Santiago, Chile, and looked after marketing and communications for Chile, Peru, Bolivia, and Ecuador. Then I had the chance after 2+ years there to do a 1-year assignment in Australia. And it was kind of a dream job. It would have been your dream job, Shabby. I got to look after sports and entertainment marketing, kind of a similar role I had in Chile, only a broader remit in some aspects. And I had media as well, but I didn't have promotions there. And then I did that for Australia and New Zealand. And then I got a phone call to move to France. And I spent 5 years in France in 2 different roles. One was a general management role, which I really needed to just broaden out of marketing for a little while and get that training under my belt. And then back in marketing in a European role. And that was a great gig. I met my husband when I was living in France. He's Dutch, but I met him in France. And then ultimately in 2006, I moved back to the U.S., and did a global role, a couple of global roles, and then I moved into our incubator at Coke. So that was like, and I never knew that was going to be my swan song, but it was. And I was in the incubator looking after Coke's highest growth brands, but really small ones. You Americans who listen to this will know some of the brands like Suja or Honest Tea or Fairlife Milk. And really just a great time to be in that whole side of the business. And then I got the phone call to come here, and I'll be honest, I wasn't looking. I always tell the story. I didn't even have a CV. I mean, imagine trying to go back in your life and write that CV. Yeah. It was wild. I'm sure I left a lot out. It was probably helped for the editing purposes, but I just kind of backed up my life and wrote a CV and then started interviewing, and it was just the right time in my kid's life. And it was a really interesting category. It's great, got great growth. I clearly like beverages, so certainly that was an attractive piece of it. I like big brands and small brands, and had that portfolio. And so I feel I've landed well, great management team here, and it's just been a really fun ride, and I get to work with people like you, so it's been great.
That is awesome. So of all those things, that the one line that well, there's plenty there at Coca-Cola, but Spanish. And that was, and you feel like that was the difference maker. So go back to college. I think you had Spanish. Was that a major?
Yeah, no, I was a funky one. I was at College of Arts and Science, okay. And I was diplomacy and foreign affairs, and Spanish major and Italian minor. So, I mean, let's be clear. I wanted to go to college and go in the Peace Corps and just kind of figure it out. I was just a global citizen from birth, really, and it's really what I wanted to do was live around the world, bring people together. So I did like human behavior a lot. I actually started at Miami as a psychology major, which explains a little bit of my love for marketing. I just think human behavior is pretty fascinating. And so that kind of got me started, but my love was languages and connecting with people. And I knew I couldn't have I knew I could be maybe a diplomat and also the diplomacy and foreign affairs piece. And so it was really just it's a differentiator, and it just taught me how to think and connect. And then, you know, when I moved to France, it gave them confidence that I could learn French. I didn't have a French background, but 5 years there, I now speak French as well. And I just was something that was really important to me as a value system. So I just decided to somehow find a way to make a living, and it kind of worked out.
Yeah. Well, the value of language only gets more and more important every single day.
That's for sure. I tell our kids, listen, you'll thank me for two things later in life. The fact that you can play piano and the fact that you can speak some languages. The rest is up to you.
So you leave Coca-Cola. You go over to Beam Suntory, as you just said, and talk about another job that is worldwide. Where's the future of that category, from the non-alcoholic to the alcoholic side for you?
Yeah, so it's a lot of fun. So bourbon is, I'm sure anybody listening who enjoys it knows, is we're lucky there's been a bit of a bourbon boom, particularly in the U.S., but it's actually outside of the U.S. as well. American whiskey overall, which bourbon falls under that heading of American whiskey, is really growing. And people are really curious. You know, the Scotch market, which has largely been the international market for whiskey, certainly I still think has growth in it, but there's really an opportunity for these discovery whiskeys and consumers are really starting to flock to some of the American whiskeys overseas. So I'm fortunate. I've got two great bourbons. I got many great bourbons, but two that are global, Maker's Mark and Jim Beam. And so those put us really well positioned outside of the U.S. and here in the U.S. But we've got a really big portfolio. We've got gin, we've got rum, we've got vodka. You know, so we participate in all the categories. We've got a great cognac, Courvoisier. So we've got a really nice portfolio of brands. And so it's been a lot of fun. And I'm fortunate because it is categories with growth at their back.
Are Coca-Cola and Beam similar with global strategies, global thinking, but local nuances of how people consume? Or I'm trying to understand if Coca-Cola is the same worldwide, but then people drink bourbon differently worldwide?
Yeah, you know, it's a really great question. So the best analogy I can make, which isn't going to be the best one, but maybe it's an attempt, is there were markets that we still had to teach people in Coke that a brown liquid was okay. And think China. They're tea drinkers, a lot of green tea, a lot of clear teas. So Sprite was like a huge brand for us in China. Hmm. And a lot of that went back to this ability to like not understand the segment called colas. And so in some ways, I liken that to bourbon. These are Scotch markets. And what's the difference of bourbon? And in many ways, it's been positioned as a harsher whiskey, where, you know, age statements aren't as important as Scotch. And so, yes, we've had to teach folks about this new category. And while it's very different than that analogy, it's all, there's also some similarities to introducing really a subcategory, if you would, the, you know, one's alcohol, one's non-alc, but to new consumers. Beam is, you know, certainly not a hundred and Beam is a 200-year-old brand, 200 plus, but not 200 plus overseas. So a little bit later into the overseas game, as Coke had been, where Coke really got its global credentials coming out of the Second War, and that really put it on the map pretty aggressively. So there are a lot of similarities. I mean, you know, beverages are in many ways often lifestyle brands. Yes, there's functional benefits to some of them, if you want to use that word, but they're definitely lifestyle brands, and it, you really do have to understand what you're selling and what you're asking people to buy into, which is really the job of marketers.
And that goes back to what you said earlier about understanding of the love of human behavior and starting at Miami in psychology. So let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go back to Oxford here. We talked about major. Was there a class or a teacher that you remember that helped you, as you said earlier, figure out how to think?
Yeah, I had a few. You know, the thing about language is when you get really deep into them, you end up in linguistics and you end up taking Latin classes and then working them back to, you know, starting at Latin and working it to the Italian or to the Spanish, whatever you were doing. And the ability to do this work was intense and amazing all at the same time, because it was the evolution of cultures in doing so and how they took certain languages. And that was just fascinating for me, because when I do this work that I do now, which is ultimately working and managing teams that sit all over the world, there's just something about the ability to recognize, first of all, the role language plays in defining culture. I mean, my children speak Dutch, not because it's necessary, but because my husband's Dutch, and to understand the culture, I think you often need to understand somebody's language. And so we really believe in that. But so I think I had a couple of incredible teachers in Spanish and Italian, actually, that probably changed my trajectory and deepened my appreciation for something that I kind of thought was just a way to connect with others. And then the other thing I have to say about my time at Miami that was pivotal was my leadership roles were everything. You know, I was president of my sorority. I was in USAF. I was on Campus Activities Council. And they taught me time management, responsibility, leadership. That was defining moments for me. I mean, I had to hold two jobs down to go to school. And so there was just no time for grass to really grow under my feet at all. And I thank Miami for that discipline, because it was that really gave me the work ethic that I now have. And I feel like a big part of my leadership style.
Yeah, I was talking to, in one of the earlier pods was with The Miz, who's a WWE wrestling superstar. And it's funny.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's incredible where everyone comes from. But he talks about the importance for everybody to take theater and take improv and everything every day. That's all we're doing. We're just interacting with people and learning how to communicate. And that goes back to your human behavior comment, too.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, that's a beautiful thing about a, you know, 4-year degree, right? That first degree, it's really all about, you know, just how we interact, how we get along with others, how we work in groups, how we think. And it can't be underestimated.
And you and I have had the privilege, or I'd say kind of fun, going back for Creative Marketers every spring or fall and just interacting with the students. I'm amazed walking through the Farmer Business School Friday at 4:00, how many people are in there in groups and thinking and working. It's different than the early 90s when we were at school.
It definitely is, but I think it's in line with, you know, what you see the next generation of people coming up in your businesses, right? And just, it's a whole different ballgame of what they expect and the value proposition they're hoping to get out of their employers. And I think they're setting them up well, because I really do believe that's how things are going to get done. I mean, anything's crowdsourced now, right? And ultimately, that's what we're trying to do, is get the best work out of teams of people and really, you know, try to minimize the individual and maximize the group work. And so I love Miami for what they're doing and the way they're bringing people together in that way.
And when you came over to Beam, another Miami alum, Kevin George, was in a similar role there. How often do you run into Miamians in what you're doing every day?
Oh, a lot. You know, I have Kevin George to thank. First of all, he left me a lot of gifts in this job. I never have a day when I complain about Kevin George. I have to go, oh, that's another one of Kevin's great things. He had this job for 6 years and did an incredible job and left a tremendous legacy. So he was, first of all, helpful to me in the process, and has been helpful to me throughout. Here, now that I'm in Chicago, I mean, Miami is like an institution in Chicago. There's probably 10 people. I'm looking out on my floor right now, and I could probably name 6 that I'm looking at that went to Miami. in Atlanta, you can imagine most often people thought for sure I was talking about the school in Florida, and I had to explain it. So it's really nice to be in the Midwest, where Miami is just such an incredibly respected institution and really and truly loved. So there's a lot of love around this building for Miami of Ohio.
What keeps you up at night, and or what fires you up every morning when you get in there?
You know, it keeps me up at night. I think, like anybody, I'm sure I don't spend enough time with my kids. I'm sure I'm growing older by the minute, probably not taking as good a care of myself as I should. But what keeps me up at night is just this idea that, you know, what am I doing a good job? Am I leading people the right way? Am I helping to grow this business the right way? And so what I start my day, and I started this thing a while ago, where I try to learn something every day. So if I'm on the treadmill, I try to listen to something. So I listen to your podcast sometimes. I listen to something every day, just get a different perspective. And that's really the most important thing I can do to start my day. So I find that if you get into a rut, I don't bring out the best of myself. And so what I'm really just trying to do is challenge myself to learn something, challenging myself to, you know, I'm vulnerable, I'm going to make mistakes in this job, but I feel like that I look out and go, there's a whole lot of people that are looking for me to leadership and for what their next career move is and for that kind of guidance. And I take that pretty seriously. And that's probably the accountability that I think we all should spend more time worrying about. And if we do, I genuinely believe the business follows.
And learning something probably outside of the industry that you're in every day too, from just a web.
Yeah, no, that's got to be for sure. Inside the industry is easier, right? I could go to a meeting and probably I will learn something from all these people who know a lot more than me. But outside the industry is what I really need, because it's those connections. I mean, the lines are blurring now anyway. Marketing is getting redefined by the moment. And our ability to connect with what's going on in government, what's going on with institutions and business, and how where growth's coming from, it can really come from us in any direction.
All right, so let's finish there on how it's being redefined. I mean, AR, VR, AI, everything we learn, coding, everything we hear about now is a two-letter or three-letter word. Where do you see the world of marketing as it relates and how it affects brands 6 months or even 2 years down the road?
Well, the one thing to be true is I think that it forces us to continue to never take our eye off the fundamentals, because a lot of those are kind of shiny objects. We're never going to be able to keep up. So for me, one thing I could push the teams to do is all the things we know, who are we talking to? What does this brand stand for? You know, what is this brand all about? All of those things that make that they can't waver, because it's even harder for them to get diluted or messed up in a world that is dictated, if you would, by technology and AI and VR and all of these things that are in all the data possibilities. So one is, I believe, stronger than ever in the fundamentals of brand building that I don't think will change. What changes is how we reach consumers, how we can reach consumers faster, is the democracy that's involved in it now, right? Like small brands, big brands, it's not about who has bigger budgets, it's about who's smarter and how they use data, how they leverage technology. So I do see that's not going away. So I do believe that, you know, I'm not native to a lot of that. I need to surround myself with people who are native, but it requires you to have both. It requires you to have these people that also keep us grounded in what we're about and remember to play the long game as well as the short game. As that technology gets better, as we get better at it, as we learn how to integrate it into our business. But I think we shouldn't get too distracted by the job at hand is still to make consumers, understand something about our brands, and in doing so, feel differently about our brands and their desire to participate in what we're selling. So that, I think, is still fundamentally true.
That was really fun and incredibly informative. From a psychology major to language to foreign diplomacy, and now into a global CMO role, it shows her success comes from great thinking and the understanding of human behavior, and not simply the major you have on your diploma. Rebecca is the best in the industry. So please make sure to follow and listen to her interviews and speeches. And of course, frequent her beverage choices when you can, even at Skipper's. Thanks for listening.